when he came into work over there, the chef was a union chef already, and the people were not happy there. They used to work overtime, they didn't get paid for time and a half. They used to get, they were supposed to get vacation money, and they gave them a check, and they used to sign the check, and they used to take back them the check, the management. And it was a very outstanding store. They had very good merchandise over there, and they were making a lot of money, the company. And my husband couldn't get any people to work in the shop. When he used to call the union for sending the man to work, when they heard this year particular shop, they didn't want to go to work over there. So they still have, the two sons have two stores now in the city of Chicago. So he had once a big fight with the management, and he said he was going to leave them. He can't work like this with management like that, unless they're going to leave him alone, let him do whatever he wants. He said, I'm working for you, and I'll always see that you should be pleased. You should get your work out in time. But at the same time, I want you to be, I want to have the people do for me to work what I tell them to do, and they should be pleased too. Otherwise, I will not work for you. So they didn't want to do this here for him. They didn't want to consent to it, and he quit. He quit it. When he quit them, we opened the store for ourselves. He worked for them three times. They called him three times back. We opened a store on the south side. But prior to that, we opened a store on the Vaughan and Fairfield, a fur shop we opened.
Right after he quit the other
shop? Yeah, right after he quit that shop, yeah. And we fixed it up with the safe and counters and mirrors and carpet, and we fixed it up beautifully, the place. And that neighborhood, the Vaughan, was just coming up. There were maybe in a block two houses, two stores. In the side street, maybe two houses were on a block. It was just booming up, just coming up. So people, the business people even, couldn't make a living. They went all bankruptcy. They couldn't make a living.
People weren't going up there?
There were not enough people. And those people that they had, they used to go to Maxwell Street. They used to, were you ever on Maxwell Street? Take a ride on Maxwell Street. Everything is outside. I haven't been there for years, I don't know, but in my time, they used to call it the ghetto, the Jewish ghetto. They were all Jewish people, had stores on the sidewalk, laying. Everything was on the sidewalks, on table and in stores. And they had men, pullers, to pull in to buy things. And what was I saying?
Well, you were talking about the Devon store.
Yeah, so they were all going to the ghetto to buy, because there was cheaper to buy things. So the groceries and the fruit stores and the butchers, there were no clothing stores. We came in with the fur shop, so none of them, they made a living over there. So we stayed there 6 months, and we didn't even make 1 month rent. And we put in maybe $8,000 in the store. And a lot of payments, we had to make payments yet on fixtures and everything else. And we moved from there to the south side again, but it was a different neighborhood. That was on 79th and Ashland Boulevard, Ashland Avenue, we moved. And we fixed up a store over there, and there we made money. It was a beautiful store. When we used to close up the store, we didn't care for people. They had a whole night open the store. We used to close up 6 o'clock and go away. And go away for weekends and so on, and we made a lot of money over there. And when we used to close up the store, everybody used to go in and look in. We had a light burning in the store when we closed. Look in how beautiful it was, the store. And this same company that we worked before, I said we went 2-3 times there, so then called them one nice day, they called Sal should come there to see them. And they liked them awful lot, and he was a good manager. And Sal went there, and they gave him a proposition. They'll pay him $150 a week or so. He should come, or $125, something like it. He should come there. When he came back and told me, I'm giving up the store, I'm going back to work to Turnovers, I cried like that. I didn't want him to go back there. I wanted the store. The store was good. In this store, I helped them out. In this store, I used to go and buy furs. I used to go buy linings. And I used to take care of whoever brought in to fix things or to make something. I used to give them receipts. And I kept the book. And I made the deposits. I used to run to the bank. Every day to the bank I used to run. With hundreds of dollars.
You were doing this in addition to taking care of your kids? And
at that time, my boy was in a private school. And I had a girl with me. The baby, my daughter was with me. And she was going to school. She was going to the school at that time. And she was going to a Catholic school.
You were missing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do with the store. I liked the store very well. And we advertised to sell the safe and sell the tables and the machines and the mirrors. I almost gave away for nothing. I kept it for a year. I kept it in the storage house. The big things, like a safe and a few tables and machines. I thought, maybe he'll come back. Maybe he'll want to open again. I kept it in the storage house. But he didn't want to come back to the store.
Did you have any say about that at all? Did he ask you what you thought? Or?
He wanted to go back. So he went. But on the conditions that he wanted. When he came back, it was a union ship. He got a satisfaction that the boss couldn't even come into the shop. He did whatever he wanted. He gave the checks, and they signed, and he even saw them cashing the checks in the bank. He didn't trust the people. He went into the bank with them on his lunch hour to see the way they cashed the checks. The people. And then it was a union ship.
Did you have a lot of influence on his feeling that way, do you think? And wanting a union shop?
I did. But I wanted him to belong to the union too, so he said, how could I belong to the union if I work for a boss? And I have to conduct the people to work. How could he belong to the union? And you know what I did? Several times I paid him for him in the union. And he never made any payments. He did later, he did make payments. When he retired, he became a unionist. When he retired, he was 65, and he retired. Wait a minute. I moved to Marine Drive in 49. I moved to Marine Drive. Maybe it was in 63. In 58. I think he retired in 58. He was 67 years when he died. He was 67. So we lived on Marine Drive at that time. He retired, and he walked around for about a year, and he got tired of running around like that. He went to the park, he went here, he went there, he used to dress up nice, walk around, and I worked. I worked at that time. So one day he came home and he said, I went to the union and asked for a job. I said, you're not a union man, how could you get a job? He said, well, they didn't give me a job. So I said, so what did you do? Well, he said, I got a job anyways. I said, how did you get a job? He started working for a son of the same boss.
From the Turner brothers?
Was it a son or it was a nephew. I think it was a nephew. It was a nephew of his. So, and they only wanted union people. I said, now I'm going to make you for a union man, because you didn't want to be before a union man. I'm going to make you now for a union man. And I went in and paid in $10. And the company used to take off every month for union dues. So I said, give them $25, because at that time I think it was $10 assessment of the building, and it was $50 to pay in or something like it. I don't remember. And he paid in the full amount, and he used to work 2 days a week over there. So for the money that he used to buy, he used to make there, he bought shirts and sweaters and pants he used to buy himself. But he became a union, and he died a union man.
It sounded like earlier one time when we were talking that Saul was a little upset when you finally decided that you wanted to go back to work. And that, like, when you first quit work, when you married, that you really didn't want to. Is that?
He always wanted me to quit. He didn't want me to work because he wanted to travel. He said, I worked all my life so hard, and we saved up a little money, and he wanted to travel. And I was not 65 yet, and I didn't want to. I worked so many years with the union, so I didn't want to just walk out and then lose everything out. So I went to when I came to Fall River from Europe. So when I came over there, I had to register in the Hayas. That was the Hayas. Was organization that takes care for Jewish immigrants organization. So I had to, whoever came from Europe, Jewish people, they registered themselves with the Hayas. So I registered myself over there. So when he retired, and he wanted me to retire, and as I said before, my father made me older, whether I was older or they made me a few years older, I didn't know it. So I went to find out how old I was. So over there, I thought that this was the only place to find out how old I was. So one summer on my vacation, I went to Fall River. That was I was that time 60 years old. I was that time. So I came there. They didn't have that organization wasn't there anymore. It was in a different city, in Boston. So I had a cousin, a lawyer, over there. So I went to my cousin, the lawyer, and I asked him, what could I do? So he said, let me think of it. So he thought that he had some friends in the federal building, that he'll take me to the federal building and find out there. Maybe they would be able to tell him, or would be some papers there, how old I was. So they came, I went with him over there, and he said to me, he introduced me to a federal man, and I told him the story, everything, and that's all he wanted to know, what year I came and on what boat I came and what was my real name. And I gave him all that, information, and he said to me that the government will let me know. They're going to let me know in a few weeks. It went away about 3-4 months. I get a letter from the government that was a Social Security already. I should come at once. There's some information for me. So I went away over there, and a man interviewed me, and he said, I was at that time 60 years old, and on my papers, I was at that time on my papers, when I came into this country, I was 2 years older. 2 years older, and by the time I registered, till the time I came there, they gave me that year, it was a few months left, so they made a whole year. So they gave me a whole year to that. So I had 3 years.
Different.
3 years different I had. So today, the way they had the papers, I was 63 years old. And I had 63 years old. 60 years old. That's the way I knew that I was 60 years old. So I was stupid that time. So I, when they told me I'm 63 years old, I said, oh no, it can't be. I didn't realize that I could retire earlier, see? I didn't realize at that time. So I said, oh no, it can't be. But then I caught myself and I said, well, if my father gave that age, I suppose I am that old. Isn't it right? Father's word is more than mine. But I knew that I was 60, that I was 13 years old when I came to this country. And when they gave me 4 years old, so I was 17 years old when I came to this country. See? Because I was a big girl and they didn't want me to have trouble. So I said, oh no, it can't be. And then I said, well, if my father gave me that age, my father knew what was right. So I had 2 ages. So I benefited.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I was that age or not, I don't know.
Lottie, how long, or at what point, once you were married, did you go back to work, and why did you go back then?
I went back to work. My son went to the Marines, and my daughter went away to Champagne. And I remained alone, and I thought that I'll get off my mind. I didn't know what to do with myself. So that's the time I went to look for a job.
When was that, do you mean?
It must have been in the 30s. It must have been in the... when was the CIO and what year was organized? I think it was organized in the 35. In 35. And this was before that. Or it was sometimes, it was that time. I couldn't find a job. And I was running to the union. I wanted the union's job. And nobody knew me. I didn't know anybody. Nobody knew me over there.
That had been, how many years had that been then? That had been...
That was from 1917 to... I quit work in 17 when I got married. And this was already in the 30s. It was in the 30s because when the CIO organized, I helped them organize. It must have been in the 35 or something like that. I went out to look for a job and I couldn't find a job. I sat out on the State Street in every store. In every store. And I couldn't find a job. But I left the application. They asked me for application. I left the application. Finally, one store in Mendel Brothers. I wanted a cup of coffee, and I asked, I filled out application over there, and I asked if they have a coffee shop, and they told me, yeah, they have a coffee shop. And I even filled out the application for that I could do selling. I was selling, I think, in the custom jewelry I was selling. And one day I went, they had a coffee shop, and I went in the coffee shop, and I heard there were a lot of people sitting and eating. That was only for people that worked there. And I heard a man talk. He said he got a couple of hundred overcoats, and he needs labels to sew in. And he couldn't, and he can't get no people to sew in labels. And then everybody went away from that man. I walked up to him and I said I could sew labels. And I never sewed labels. But I thought labels were so easy to sew. And he said, all right, come in tomorrow, you'll get the job. And I came in there to Mendel's and I sewed labels. And after the labels were true, I said I could do bottom felling. I did bottom felling for a long time in the Hardship and Marks before I was married. So he gave me, took me in the shop, and I sewed the bottom felling. They had a girl there. I used to help her out. And then they showed me, the girl showed me how to shorten sleeves and length sleeves, and I made this. I only had to see, whatever I used to see, I used to make it. I was very handy, and I made it. But they only paid 25 cents an hour, and the union paid 50 cents an hour. So I was trying to get in the union. I was running to the union all the time, and I couldn't get a job. The men used to see me from far, open the door. He said, nothing today, nothing today. He used to tell me, nothing today. Then the Boston store, we had a Boston store where now the drugstore is on State Medicine. It was also a big department store. And the Mendel's was where the Bebo's is now. A different change now. So I went in the Boston store. I knew already a lot of things to do. Sleeve shortening and labels and stuff. So, and bottom felling and operating. So I went there for a job. And I got there 40 cents an hour. But I still wanted 50 cents an hour like the union paid. So one day I got into the union. Yeah, I was fired from the Boston store. I went to the union, and there was an Italian fella that worked with me too in the Boston store. And he saw me in the Boston store, and he came to the manager in the Boston store and told the manager that he saw me in the union. When he would be a smart manager, he would say, how do you know that she was in the union? You were in the union, too. But he didn't say this to him. But when I came back to work, I was fired there. You would go to the union would give you a job. So I came back again to the union. I came to the union, and the same thing, nothing today, nothing today. And I walked out. When I walked out, I saw Sydney. He was a cousin of mine. He had just graduated economy. He was an economist. Is it right? Economist. And he got a job with Rosenblum, Frank Rosenblum. Did you hear Frank Rosenblum? He was the big boss. And I didn't know. I was so stupid. I didn't know what did they need an economist there. I said, what are you doing here? And he said, I work for Frank Rosenblum. He was a cousin of my Sydney. He said, Lottie, what are you doing here? I said, well, just so I'm looking around. I was ashamed to tell him because he knew I was married and I had a nice husband and I had children. So I said, where is Frank? And he said, he's upstairs in this room. Well, I watched Sydney go out and I went upstairs to Frank. And Frank recognized me. And I asked him how he was all those years, because during the strike in 1915, he was an organizer, and then he became had a big job in New York in the union and in the office in the main in the general office. So I knew that he could do something for me. And he told me everything about his family and about everything, and he asked me, and I told him I was married, and I want to go to work. He said, what do you want to go to work for? I said, well, I want to give a good education to my children. I don't want them to be... my daughter didn't go either at that time yet to... my son was away. My daughter didn't go. She went to high school at that time yet. So I said, I want to give my children a good education. And he said, you've got the hard time to find a job? And he took the telephone in his hands and he called my brother, who was at that time in the Employment Bureau. And he said, Sam, he said, I have a girl over here. She's an old-timer. She was a very good girl. She is a good girl. I want you to take care of her. And she said, is that the girl that she just worked out from here? And he said, yeah. It was just about maybe 25 minutes after I came to. 20 minutes or so. And he said, send her down. In the meantime, yeah, so send her down, he said. So I went down. When I came down, he had a door open for me, and he said, why didn't you tell me who you were? I said, well, who was I? I'm just a plain working woman, I said. I'm just looking for a job. I want a job. I said, you don't know me. I was part of the organizing the Amalgamated. I was part of beat it. They beat me, they stabbed me, they did everything to me, and I'm entitled to get a job over here. Well, he said, you know what I'll tell you? You go home and don't come around here. When I line up a good job for you, I'll send you. Okay. So meantime, I went back to Mendel's. And they were glad to see me come back. So I got 35 cents an hour already in Mendel's. And I worked there. One day I got home from work. My daughter came back home from school, the telephone rang, and Mr. Margolis called, and he said, that was on a Friday. He said to her, tell your mother that she should go Monday morning to Oak Park to Bounce Clothing to work. And did I give you that too?
You told me, yeah, you told me about Bonds afterwards, but you didn't tell me how you got the job.
Yeah. And Saturday morning I got the okay from the union and I went to Bounds and I worked 29 years in Bounds.
Lottie, what did Saul have to say about your going back to work again? Did it matter to him?
Well, at that time...
When you first went back to work after...
Well, at that time, it was right after my girl was married. Right after my girl was married.
But, I mean the first time, like when you went to Mendel Brothers, or the first time you went to work after you were married. That was before your daughter was married. That was like...
Yeah, that was...
When she was still in school.
Yeah, she was still in school at that time. He was glad that... We didn't have money at that time. We had spent all our money. We put the money that we made on the south side in the stores, we lost on the barn. We fixed up a nice store. So we had no money at that time. And my girl was still going to school, and I wanted to send her to school. So whatever I made, I saved. Every penny I saved. And then when I started to work for Barnes in the union shop, I made good money. So I could afford to send both children to school. My son supported himself a little bit. But my daughter didn't, and I supported both children in college.
Was Saul making good money when he went back to work at Turner Brothers after the bond shop?
Yeah.
That's but it was still not enough for the kids to go to school.
No, well, he believed the boy has to be educated, but not a girl. A girl should get married and she'll cook and wash diapers. That's the way he used to say. He had a little old-fashioned ways in him. That girls don't need no education. And so I said, well, I want her to have an education. And every dollar that I made went, in fact, we had in a saving in the store. We had a saving, and the management knew that I had a daughter in school. So the saving was down because we had a couple of young fellow salesmen, and they used to get the pay and lose their money in horse races, or women they used to run around, and then the next day used to come around and borrow money from in the shop and in the store. So the management came to a point that he made a saving in the store. He used to take off as much each one wanted to take off, and those that needed money borrowed.